All right, so let's dive into a topic that I think a lot of people have some trouble with, and that's getting those permissions right, especially when you're running websites on NGINX and PHP FPM.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's kind of like setting up, that security system for your website. And we're going to be taking a look at this deep dive. We're going to be taking a look at a blog post by Danila Vershinin. Now, if you're not familiar with Danila, he is the guy behind one of the biggest NGINX module repositories. So you know that he's seen a lot of these permission issues and really knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's definitely had to deal with his fair share of these. And in this post, he lays out a really strong argument for a very particular way of doing things. Really arguing that this is the best way to keep your site secure and, running without any problems.
And he's very opinionated about it.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what makes it such a good read, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
So first things first, he talks about the PHP FPM user, which he calls the website user. Now, why is that so important to have a dedicated user for each website?
Well, if you think about it, if all your websites are running under one user, like the root user, and a hacker, finds a way to exploit one of those sites, that means they've got the keys to the kingdom. They can do whatever they want, delete files, add malware, just wreak havoc on your entire server.
Okay, so it's basically like using root for everything is like leaving your front door wide open.
Pretty much, yeah.
So these dedicated users are like having separate security guards for each website. So if one of them gets compromised, the damage is limited.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all about, limiting that risk, containing it.
All right.
Give each website its own little sandbox to play in without being able to really affect anything else on the server.
And what about the naming conventions for these users? Because I can imagine it getting pretty messy if you just start naming them randomly.
Right. Well, Vershinin suggests keeping it simple and logical. Use the domain name, like example for example, .com, or the type of CMS the site's running, like WordPress for a WordPress site.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you can keep track of everything. Now, he also mentions the importance of separate PHP FPM pools for each website.
Yes.
I'm not super familiar with how that works. Can you break that down a little bit?
Sure. So imagine like a highway with multiple lanes. Each website gets its own lane. That's kind of what PHP FPM pools do. They give each website dedicated resources so that, if one website is getting slammed with a bunch of traffic or, starts to have some problems, it doesn't affect all the other websites on the server.
Oh, so it's kind of like compartmentalizing
Exactly.
each site's PHP processes. Interesting. And he provides some code snippets in the article too, right? Showing how to configure these pools in that PHP FPM settings file.
Yeah, he does, which is really helpful because that's where you tell PHP FPM, which user and group should be running the code for that particular website.
Okay, so we've got our dedicated website users. We've got their separate PHP FPM pools all set up. What about the web server itself? Where does NGINX fit into all of this?
So NGINX is like the main gatekeeper. It's the one that's directing the traffic to the right website. And it should run with its own user that doesn't have a lot of privileges. And typically, this is the Nginx user on systems like Red Hat or CentOS. And then on Debian-based systems, it's usually www data.
Okay, so unlike those PHP FPM users, this NGINX user is global, right?
That's right, yeah. It's for all the websites on the server. It's more like, I guess you could say, like a building superintendent who has access to all the apartments but doesn't actually have keys to go into any of the individual units.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
So how do we connect these two? The website user locked in its little apartment unit and the NGINX user, the building supernode. How do we connect them so they can actually work together?
Well, that's where things get interesting. Vershinin's solution is to add the NGINX user to the website users group. So that way, NGINX can read all the files for the website, but it doesn't have full control over them.
So it's like giving the building a super a master key that only opens certain apartments,
Exactly.
not all of them. That's pretty clever.
It is, and it's really important to this model because it means that, NGINX can serve up the website files, but it can't change them without permission from the website user.
Okay, that's starting to make sense now before we get into like the nitty-gritty of SMOD and all that stuff. Let's take a step back. Why is Vershinin so adamant about this particular approach?
Well, I think it comes down to his experience. He's seen what happens when permissions aren't set up right. And he's really advocating for a way to do things that minimizes those risks.
So it's not just theoretical security. Right. It's practical solutions.
Exactly. Yeah, battle tested, you could say.
And the next part about file ownership, that's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, file ownership. So we're talking about the chown command here, right?
Yeah, that's right. This is where we decide, you know, who actually owns the files and directories for each website.
Okay. And Vershinin's golden rule here is?
All website files should be owned by the website user and group.
Okay.
So like if our website user is example.
Right.
Then all the files and folders in that website's directory should be owned by example. Dot example.
So it's like saying everything in that little apartment belongs to the person with the key.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody else can touch it, not even the building super.
Right. And that just, you know, reinforces that whole separation of responsibility that we were talking about.
Yeah.
And he gives some good examples in the post of both the right and the wrong way to use chown, just to really drive the point home.
I like that concrete examples are always good.
For sure.
Now, once we have that ownership sorted out, we need to set the actual permissions using shmim.
Right.
And this is where things can get a little bit cryptic for people who aren't, you know, super familiar with the syntax.
It can be a little intimidating, but let's break it down. The command he recommends is this chmod, daemon u wxgrx path-to-website-files.
Okay, so let's decode that a little bit. What's with all those letters and symbols?
Right, so the U stands for the user, in this case our website user.
Okay.
The G is for the group.
Yeah.
Which includes the NGINX user.
Okay.
And then O represents all the other users on the system.
Right.
And the RWX, RX, and RX, those are defining what each of those categories can do.
Okay.
So R is for be accessed, and W means they can write to the files. And X is for execute permission, which is important for directories.
Okay.
And then that equal sign means that we're setting the permissions to exactly what comes after it.
Right.
So basically with that command, you're saying the website user has full control, read, write, execute.
Okay.
The NGINX user can read and execute, but not write anything.
Okay.
And then everyone else is totally locked out.
Okay. That makes sense. So it's like a good starting point, a good baseline for most websites.
Yeah. I think so. It gives the website user what they need. Mm-hmm. And NGINX can do its job and, you know, keeps everybody else out.
Now, is there a risk that that might be a bit too restrictive? Like, what if you have other people who need access to certain files, like developers, for example?
Yeah. And Vershinin actually addresses that in the comments.
Oh, really?
He's a big fan of using a Git-based deployment workflow where developers don't actually have SSH access to the server.
Wait, so you're saying developers shouldn't have SSH access at all? How does that even work?
I know it sounds weird, but it's becoming more and more popular.
Okay.
Especially with teams that are really focused on security.
Okay.
So basically, developers work on their own copies of the code.
Right.
And all their changes are tracked using, you know, a version control system like Git.
Okay, so how do those changes actually get to the live server then?
So when they're ready to deploy their changes, they push their code to a central repository.
Okay.
Like, you know, GitHub or GitLab.
Right.
And then the server is actually set up to automatically pull in the latest code from that repository whenever there's a new push.
So it's like the server is constantly updating itself based on what's in that repository.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I imagine it's a lot safer than having developers manually making changes on the live server.
It is a lot safer. You know, it separates the development environment from the live website.
Right.
So less risk of accidental mistakes, you know, or someone, you know, doing something malicious.
And you have a complete history of every change that was made, too, right?
You do. It's like having a security camera for your code base.
I like that.
You can track down those pesky bugs.
Right.
Roll back to an older version if something breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot more confidence in your deployments overall.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. But what if there's a situation where someone absolutely needs to get to specific files, like even just read-only access?
Right, so for those cases, Vershinin suggests using a tool called setfetl, which stands for set file access control lists.
Okay, I've heard of that, but I'm not really sure what it does.
So basically, it lets you add more specific permissions to files and directories.
Okay.
Beyond just the basic user group other categories.
So it's like an extra layer of control.
Exactly.
On top of those standard char mod permissions.
Mm-hmm. So let's say you want to give, you know, a contractor read-only access to a certain folder on your website.
Right.
You can use setfetl to do that.
Okay.
Without giving them broader permissions to mess with anything else.
Okay. That's pretty powerful, but doesn't that make things a lot more complicated, especially if you're not, you know, a Linux expert?
It can, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why Vershinin only recommends using it when you absolutely need to.
Right.
For most situations, the basic chown shmod setup that we've been talking about is enough.
Okay.
It's all about finding that balance between, you know, being flexible and staying secure.
Makes sense. Now, what if you know, things do go wrong, someone accidentally messes up the permissions, how do you even start to troubleshoot that?
Yeah. So for that, Vershawn has another great tool, the NameI command.
Okay. And what does that do? Is it like a magical permission debugger?
Not quite magical, but it's pretty useful.
Oh, okay.
It gives you a detailed breakdown of the permissions for a file or a directory, including all the parent directories leading up to it.
So you can kind of see exactly where that permission chain breaks down.
Yeah, exactly. Helps you figure out where the problem is.
Right. And finding the problem is often the hardest part.
It definitely can be.
Now, you know, we've been focusing on Vershawn's blog post, but there's a ton of information on the comment section too, right?
Definitely.
It's like a bonus round of, you know, insights and real world experiences from people who've been dealing with these same permission issues.
Right. Everyone sharing their tips and tricks.
Okay. Well, let's dive into that treasure trove of knowledge and see what other gems we can uncover. Okay. So digging through these comments, it seems like one thing that keeps tripping people up is getting NGINX to properly serve those static assets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like your CSS files and images.
Right. That's a classic one. And it just shows how important it is to make sure you add that NGINX user to the website users group.
Right. Because if NGINX isn't in that group, it can't even see those asset directories, even if the permissions on the directories themselves look fine.
Exactly. It's all about, you know, making sure that those users and groups and permissions are all working together.
Yeah, working in harmony.
Exactly.
Now, there's another interesting thing that came up in the comments about using those Linux ACLs.
Oh, yeah. Access control lists.
Right. Some people are really into them, but Vershawn seems to be pretty against it.
Yeah, he's definitely more of a keep it simple kind of guy.
Yeah.
He says ACLs just add a whole bunch of complexity, and if you're not careful, they can actually make things less secure.
And I can see his point. You know, if you're already struggling with the basics of chown and schmod,
right,
throwing ACLs into the mix is just going to make things more confusing.
Exactly. It's like trying to run before you can walk.
Yeah.
You got to get those fundamentals down first.
Now, one comment that I thought was really interesting was about not giving developers SSH access.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of crazy at first, but Vershawn makes a good case for using that Git-based deployment workflow instead.
It is a different way of thinking about things.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a lot safer. By getting rid of direct SSH access, you're basically eliminating a whole bunch of potential problems.
Right.
You know, mistakes that developers could make accidentally, or someone gets hold of their login credentials.
And it makes everything much more trackable too, right? Because with Git, you have a record of every single change that was made to the code.
Exactly. You know, who did it, when they did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to find and fix bugs, or, you know, go back to an older version if something goes wrong.
So looking at all of this together, you know, those dedicated users, the chown schmod setup, the Git-based deployments, it seems like Vershawn is aiming for a really locked down approach to security.
Yeah, he is. And I think it's a really smart approach, especially these days, you know, with all the cyber attacks and data breaches happening.
Right. You got to be extra careful.
Exactly. Minimize those risks as much as possible.
But doesn't that kind of security come with a trade-off? You know, what about flexibility?
Well, yeah, there's always a balance.
Like if you have a bunch of developers who need to work together on a project, wouldn't it be easier to have a system that's a bit more open?
Yeah, it can be tricky.
Yeah.
But I think with a bit of planning and the right tools, you can definitely have both security and collaboration.
Okay.
You know, Git is great for working together on code. And there are other things like SSH key management and two-factor authentication.
Right.
That can add extra layers of security without making things too inconvenient.
So it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You can customize your security to fit your specific needs and how much risk you're comfortable with.
Exactly. And that's one of the things I really like about Vershawn's blog post in the comments section.
Yeah.
You know, they give you a really good framework for thinking about website security.
Right.
Those basic principles you can apply to any situation.
Well, I think that's a great point to wrap up our deep dive into the world of NGINX and PHP FPM permissions.
Yeah.
We covered a lot today, from users and groups to get deployments and access control lists.
It's been a fun one.
It has. I hope everyone listening learned a thing or two about how to keep their website secure. And be sure to check out Vershawn's blog post for yourself. It's full of really practical advice.
Yeah. And don't skip the comments either.
Yes. Definitely read those comments.
That's the good stuff in there.
All right. Until next time, stay curious and keep exploring.